Paddy Power are giving money back as a free bet if your horse finishes second, third or fourth on one horse race every single day. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Hello there and welcome to this Monday Racing Postcast. I'm Maddie Pleon. I'm joined today by the Racing Post betting editor Keith Melrose and Paddy Power's Paul Binfield to discuss what was an epic weekend of action. We had the Derby, the Oaks, the Eclipse, the Prix de Jockey Club, the Prix de Diane. And also on this show, as well as looking back on that, we're going to look ahead to York's Dante meeting and the start of the July Festival, including the July Cup on Saturday. So it continues to be a really action-packed time for jump racing fans. And I'm sure if you told a racing fan the results from this weekend on Friday, they would have been fairly shocked. But there's plenty of talking points and a really sort of informative and interesting weekend. So I'm glad that we've got you folks to discuss it. Keith, you've had your porridge this morning. Binners, you've had your blackberries. As we were just saying before we went on air, we're well prepared to dissect this action. So let's go straight in to Epsom. So we'll start with the Derby review then. Serpentine won in a shock result from Khalifa Sat and Oren Navian. Now, this was a very dramatic race, Keith, and people have all had their different views on it afterwards. Some people saying it was unsatisfactory to watch, others saying that it was the jockey's fault, and just a really fascinating race from a viewing perspective, such a wide margin winner. But you've got some interesting takeouts in terms of the wind and the sectional sort of analysis.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, obviously it was an unsatisfactory Derby. You want to see the best horse winning this race. But, you know, we've had Cracksman in Japan in recent years, the best horse in the Derby, who haven't won it. So it's not the first time that will have happened. And it's not out of the question Serpentine is the best horse in the race. But I think what we talk about the sectional analysis, which is what people really wanted to get out of this race, to see the way Serpentine had made that move, the way Emmett McNamara had played the run. And it shows that it was an absolutely incredible ride for McNamara, true enough. But Sectional Times grew up on American tracks where everything's flat and left-handed and a mile and a furlong round. Epsom couldn't be further from that. It's a very different course in that regard. And I think there's a couple of things I thought from the Derby. The first is that if you look when they stop climbing, at the highest point of the course, Serpentine's only a length and a half up. It's on the flat downhill run where he really makes the ground up and gets a break on them. And then he hits the downhill run in the straight and he's got the wind behind him. The reports were that the wind was all behind up the straight there. So it was perfectly timed for McNamara from not just in terms of purely times, but in terms of the circumstances. And in that case, it was a bit, if Serpentine had sprinted up the hill and got seven lengths clear up the hill, you'd have said fair enough and the jockeys were right to wait for him to come back. But he made the ground up at the easiest point to do so. And that's what sectional analysis tells you is the most fundamental building block. You make your move at the time where it is easiest to do so. That's exactly what McNamara did. And that's how he won the Derby.
Quite simple when you put it like that. But it was really a superb ride. Do you think that it was silly from the other jockeys to dismiss him and let him go? Because Ashin Murphy, he did some of his post-race analysis, which has become really popular on social media. And he did mention that it was quite unsatisfactory that the second and the third basically didn't move throughout the whole race. He was fourth on the 2000 Guineas winner, Cameco. Then we had the Lingfield Derby winner, English King, back in fifth. Do you think that people are right to blame the jockeys in behind?
It's hard to know there's no question. There was mistakes made on 16 of those 17 horses. I think that can be said without, or 15 of the 16 horses. That's not a controversial point. And the psychology of groupthink, if you want to criticise the jockeys, is something that you don't necessarily need to get into. What I thought, something that occurred to me was the very similar sort of thing happened in the Oaks, where two much lesser horses, you know, the two that went clear in the Oaks were rated 100 tops, and they couldn't sustain that sort of gallop. They collapsed, they came right back, disappeared through the back of the field as soon as they were caught. And I wonder if that played on some minds when Serpentine went clear. Mm. Well, hello, lads, it's the Oaks again. This thing will come back. I mean, the fact that Serpentine kept up the gallop, he wasn't entirely flattered. That he is a 120 horse or thereabouts on what he managed to do and how he managed to keep up that gallop. But I just wonder from the psychology point of view whether the jockeys that let him go had the Oaks in the back of their mind.
And from your perspective, do you like watching races like that, or would you prefer to see a more, I don't know if you could even say more truly run race, but a race where more horses get involved at the finish?
Oh, absolutely. I think as a purist, as a racing fan, you want to see, you don't want to see the Derby nicked, which is what happened. You just do not want to see the Derby nicked. So fair play to McNamara for doing it, but it doesn't make for the best Derby I'll ever see. I don't think I'll ever forget it, to be quite honest. But I would much rather see a sort of fairer reflection of all the horses in the race. But that said, I have got quite a black sense of humour, so I did chuckle as when it became clear a furlong and a half out that they weren't catching them. I thought, this is absolutely fantastic in a way.
Drama, isn't it? That's what makes these races such good sporting spectacles. You probably wouldn't want that to happen every weekend, but when it does, it's a nice reminder.
There's so little drama, though, wasn't there? It was just like, they're not catching this.
Yeah, well, yeah, indeed. Chuckled. Drama because he was a shocking and spectacular winner. Before I move over to Binners to get some future prizes, Keith, if I could just ask you for one horse to take out of the race, who would it be?
I think English King might be the best horse in the race over mile four. I think Russian Emperor might win the St. Ledger.
Okay, very interesting. Binners, what price can we get? Because I know quite a few people were keen on Serpentine for the St. Ledger, and Keith's just thrown Russian Emperor into the mix as well.
Yeah, well, Maddie, Santiago is the only Aidan O'Brien horse and only other horse that, above Serpentine in the Ledger market, a 3-1 favourite. Serpentine now is 9-2 for that. And we haven't got Keith's selection in there at the moment, so we'll have to think about doing that.
I've seen some of the other people are, he is getting quoted about 14-1. So maybe if Paddy's can offer me some of that.
We'll have to have a think about that, Keith.
And Binners, this was a dream result for you guys, I presume.
Yeah, you probably couldn't have scripted the result much better from a bookie's point of view. I thought it was marvellous drama, Maddie. I read yesterday that I think it was Donica O'Brien, who was in the O'Brien household, saying after five furlongs, Serpentine's going to win this. I don't think I predicted it quite that early, but even as a non-race reader, I thought he was going to win from a long, long way out. And I got a message from someone on a WhatsApp group I'm in, actually, saying that was an anti-climax. I disagree. I think it was really interesting. It's given us all loads of talking points. And, if the favourites won every single race, then what sort of sport would we have? It was intriguing. And you never know. Serpentine could yet still be a superstar.
Exactly, yeah. Hear, hear, Binners. I agree with you. I thought it was very interesting, but equally I do understand why others would find it a little bit disappointing. From one race...
Binners, can you give me a price on Serpentine ever beating that performance in RPRs?
I suspect not, Keith. I think the other riders may keep closer tags on him in the future, but it was a brilliant ride by a young lad who doesn't get that many chances for Aidan O'Brien. So well done to him. Probably the ride of a lifetime, and he deserves it after going so close in the Irish equivalent.
Exactly, on Tiger Moth, you're spot on there. But as I was saying, from one very sort of contentious performance to one very easy one, Love, 9-length winner of the Oaks. It was billed as a bit of a clash between her and Frankly Darling. Well, Frankly Darling couldn't even finish second because that went to her stablemate, Enistimon, and Ennis Diamond even. I get that wrong every time. Keith, Love. I mean, she clearly improved for the step up for a mile and a half, and this was visually very, very impressive.
It was, and that's what's most impressed me about her is, you know, what she did on Saturday. We thought, that's the horse. I mean, if she is taking ability aside, that's the horse she's meant to be. She's meant to be a mile and a half horse. It's the fact that she came in having done that in a Guineas as well, says to me you're looking at a really quite special filly here. I do have very slight reservations about, I don't think either of these fillies classics this year have been up to much behind her, which isn't to particularly crab Love, because she's won them by 4 1/4 lengths and 9 lengths. That's about, I think in the case of the Oaks, a bit of quick arithmetic, she's a stone better than anything else in that race, and she damn well looks it, to be quite honest, and more. You know, she's favourite for the art now. I think that's perfectly justified, especially with what happened at Sandown on Sunday, which we'll come to. She's clearly, you know, a well in the 120s already as a three-year-old filly, and with the sex allowance, the weight, the age allowance that she gets, which is probably still a little bit in favour of the three-year-olds, she will take beating wherever she really goes as a middle distance horse for the rest of the year.
Yeah, indeed. I was part of a jury that we did about where you would go next with Love, and I sort of said the same as you. You'd be thinking along the lines of the Ark, especially as an able, I mean, this was before the eclipse, but as a six-year-old, is she really getting any better? And with Love getting all the allowances and appearing to love the trip. And in the meantime, I just think from a sort of sporting perspective, I'd love to for her to go for all the big races. I mean, it could be the Irish Oaks. I'd rather see her in a King George or a Judmont or, you know, other races like that, an Irish Champion Stakes. But maybe I'm getting a bit carried away.
I think that's it. I mean, we'd all love to see her take on the colts at every opportunity possible. But I think the only race, knowing what Ballydoyle and Coolmore are like, the only race that will be inked into her diary for the rest of the year is the Ark. The rest of it she'll be placed so as not to spoil the chances of Japan winning another Group 1, for instance, or, you know, just she'll be camped. I mean, you know, if there's a soft Group 1 that they can win with something else, or they've got three for the Judmont, they won't send her there and that sort of thing. That's why I would imagine, without having read any quotes, that the Irish Oaks is the likeliest next port of call. And after that, she might get a bit of a break and build up to the Ark. But I do suspect that they'll keep her maybe among fillies to win those races. They don't. They want if they can get a colt to win a Group One, they will. So they won't put the filly in there until the Ark, when you know we've seen that they're not shy about that. But I imagine that practicalities and pragmatism will take more of a hand than we might like to think about her campaigning between now and then.
Depressing, that, isn't it? I was enjoying my little trip down getting carried away, but I think you're spot on, to be honest. More on the Irish Oaks later, because I think that's where Fancy Blue might go next as well, after winning the Prix de Dam. But we'll talk about her in just a moment. Binners, as Keith mentioned, favourite for the Ark now, Love. What price do you go?
Well, Maddie, we've got Love in the King George at 5-1. Whether she'll go there, Keith makes good points why she might not turn up. But yeah, she now heads the Ark market, 4-1 favourite. Enabled 9-2, second favourite. Gayarth 8-1, looks like he's going to go there, so that's great. And John Gosden has a strong hand in the race as well as Enable. He's got Logician and Stradivarius in there at 12 and 16-1, respectively.
And who would you want to be on in an Ark at this stage, Keith? I understand it's a long way out, but of those names, who makes most appeal?
To be honest, I've not looked at it in that much depth. I only looked as deep as to go, I think Love's the right favourite at this point. That's all I've got on the Ark at the moment. I didn't look through and find one at 20s for the listeners, unfortunately.
We'll have to save that for another time. Other highlights at Epsom then. Summer Romance won the Group 3 Princess Elizabeth. Safe Voyage just got on top in the Surrey Stakes, a Lister race over 7 furlongs. And we also had Twazole winning the Woodcut. Anything particularly of note to take from those performances, Keith?
I thought Safe Voyage was quite impressive in the Surrey Stakes, considering that I don't think he particularly liked the track. I think a sharp 7 furlongs is plenty sharp enough for him. And that back at a mile or even, you know, a stiffer 7 furlongs, I think he's a Group 1 animal on that performance. I thought he was very impressive in the end, given the way he went through the race and how I don't think that was his best conditions by any means. And yeah, he's clocked a fast time and a career best performance.
Yeah, indeed. Obviously, he's been campaigned quite exclusively on soft and testing ground. I think he was third in the QE2 last year or something like that. Yeah. So clearly a horse who the connections are really getting the best out of.
Do we know if is there going to be a lock-inge this year? I had a look today and I couldn't find
it. No, I don't think so. I think we lost the lock-inge.
I think he's a horse that could suffer for that. I thought the lock-ins, you know, especially if they did it in the autumn, it might have been the right sort of horse for that sort of race.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Top class action from Sandown Park this weekend as well. We've already mentioned the Eclipse, and we're going to give that a thorough review just after this quick break.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online, and we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday Racing Postcast. We're going to review Sunday's action now, having already spoken about the Derby and the Oaks. And Al Ali returned to his top juvenile form from last year to win the Group 3 Coral Charge. He beat Liberty Beach, who ran up against Batash in the King Stand last time. Connections are saying it'll be the King George at Goodwood next, and maybe even the Nunthorpe, where he can take on Batash himself after that. Keith, I always think that the Sandown 5 furlong track is absolutely fascinating, and it quite surprised me, this performance, because I was almost guilty of pigeonholing Al Ali into a bit of a, oh, he's just a two-year-old, but clearly not.
No, although what I would say is what we saw on Sunday, I would imagine is as good as he is now. He got the rail and he was covered up for a lot of the way. Now, I was led to believe at Sandown yesterday that it was into and a bit across on the main track, but it was a block headwind on the 5 furlong course. So staying covered up like he was the place to be. I actually thought Liberty Beach shaped really well, considering she had little cover. She was a little
She's
bit.
She's just so keen, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, and that's why I think if you're going to get them, she'll get turned over in these races more often than you might think, and then she'll turn up in Group Ones and get placed regularly. Because if you give her these big fields and you give her, you know, a Batash going like a bat out of hell every time, she will. That's when she'll give a running to the best of her ability. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see her finish in the places in the Nunthorpe, despite the fact she's been turned over there. I don't know why Ali would go for the King George. The Nunthorpe seems much a better race for him. Batash at Goodwood is, you know, that's a proper lion's den you're going into there, isn't it? So I would be maybe saving both the first two probably for the Nunthorpe. And I mean, you would also, if you were minded to give a bit of leeway, we're talking about the headwind. Lazuli and Dakota Gold finished 5th and 6th, having had their noses in the wind all the way. That also shows you why Liberty Beach shaped so well, because she did a little bit too, and she beat them by 3-4 lengths.
And if you look at the third, Tinto, who came from absolutely stone last, yeah. I'm sure he would have got well out of the wind from that position. So yeah, interesting race, and that headwind definitely something to note. Just going to take the opportunity quickly while we're talking about sprinters to mention Art Power, who otherwise we might miss because we're going to look straight at Chanty after this. But he was deeply impressive when he won his Group 3, the Lacken Stakes. How do you think he matches up against these sort of horses, Keith? Because I would love to see him in a Nunthorpe.
He's a Group 1 horse, isn't he? There's absolutely no question of that. That was a mighty performance at the weekend. And I've got the only thing I can't figure out yet about Art Power is whether he'll be a 5 furlong Group 1 horse or a 6 furlong Group 1 horse.
Let him do it both.
love to see him try both, but you know, in terms of just me backing him, I want to. I couldn't tell. I don't know whether I'd be more likely to back him for a Nunthorpe or the Haydock race. Just couldn't tell you. I mean, I think he's maybe a bit quick for something like a July Cup or the Champions Stakes sprint with that big stiff finish, but I've got no question that he's Group 1 standard.
When I checked this morning, I saw and he was like 11-1 for the July Cup. So maybe they've said he's not going to go, or maybe those odds just didn't update when I was looking at it. But that certainly did surprise me, because I definitely want to be on this horse, I think, whichever race he turned up at, if he was 11-1 next time. Binners, let's get back to Al Ali then and the big sprinting targets of the future. How did the bookies react?
Yeah, we're quite impressed, Maddie. You know, he won 3 Group 2s as a 2-year-old. He went to America and then disappointed when he tried over 6 at Newcastle, but back to his brilliant best. And he could give Batash something to think about in the King George and the Nunthorpe. We put him in a 10-1 for the Nunthorpe first show, Maddie, and Batash is still an odds-on shot at the top of the market, 4-6 favourite, with Dennis Hogan sceptical second best in at 6-1.
Fantastic. Now, what of Dashing Willoughby, Keith? He beat Spanish Mission in the Henry II Stakes. Quite an interesting race, this, because I thought they both ran really good races, whereas Cross Counter was bitterly disappointing, I think you'd have to say. Connections mentioned the Goodwood Cup and then maybe even the Melbourne Cup. If you're looking at Goodwood, I think he was 5th of 8 last year, getting the 3-year-old allowances. So you'd have to think he'd struggle this time around. But I really love this horse because he just puts his head down and he tries. And I think if they place him in the right races, he's going to have plenty more group wins ahead of him. What do you think?
I would agree with that element. The problem you tend to find with these stayers that are Group 2, Group 3 class stayers like Dashing Willoughby is they always end up taking on Stradivarius. and you'll struggle to do that. Whereas if they kept, they could probably farm races like the Henry II if they kept them at sort of lower group level stuff. That was what Cross Counters Connections were trying to do in this race, and it didn't come off. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets his win done. I've seen a couple of times now just a bit of evidence of him maybe cutting out when push comes to shove, and you know, he's won a Melbourne Cup. It's not like he doesn't get home. Although he does, obviously that's a race that tests pace at 2 miles, but I think there's something amiss there with Cross Counter at the moment. And with that being the case, it does put a bit of a cap on the form of that race. You know, there's only five runners, remember. With Hold and Summer Moon, we talked about the headwind. They were the two in front most of the way in that race. Cross Counter cut out under pressure. So in effect, what you had was Spanish Mission and Dashing Willoughby were the only two that could really win the way it panned out. And that was why I'd maybe just say take a cautious view with the form. But Dashing Willoughby has got a smashing attitude. So he could definitely pick up more lesser group races as a stayer. But I don't think Stradivarius Connections will lose much sleep.
Yeah, exactly. They've already got that form, as I say, 5th of 8 in last year's Goodwood Cup. So I don't really see any reason why he could reverse it. Promising run, I thought, from Spanish Mission. Obviously, Dashing Willoughby had race fitness on his side. Let's move on to the Eclipse now then. Again, just from a viewing perspective, really fascinating affair. Gaeth, to me, appeared to boss it from the front under William Buick. Those early fractions, for me, it seemed key. The first half of the race was where it was won, almost, in my view. And Abel, well, she just scrambled past Japan after settling further back than she has done recently. What was your take on this, Keith? Were you expecting an Abel to win going into it?
Yeah, I thought this was the race for her. I mean, the main reason I thought that, really, was that I thought she would be hard fit. They'd been taking her for secret race course gallops and all that. And Gaia's career up till this season had always been that of a horse who was best fresh, hadn't seen the track very often. I thought he was a real bounce candidate. But he's obviously shown that's not the case. I thought it was an absolutely masterful ride from Buick off the front. It was contrasted with McNamara. Now, with McNamara, you knew 3 furlongs out what had happened. And so did a couple of riders, actually. The Tory knew it by that point, what had happened in the Derby. But with Buick, it wasn't clear until quite late on that he had nailed it, because he'd got it so right and on such a knife edge that I don't think the rest realised what had happened. Whereas in a Derby, everybody knew, everybody could see. It was a smashing ride off the front, and you know, most top class rides are off the front. You know, so many, you often hear about, oh, what a great ride that was when a jockey gets a horse up in the last stride. Most of the really good rides are off the front or near as damn it. And I thought we saw two beauties this weekend, including Gaeth in this race. I thought Enable looked like she maybe just will come on for it. She came to deliver a challenge. She made up, what, 2 or 3 lengths on the early part of the straight and then just couldn't sustain that. I think the fact there was a headwind, the fact Gaeth had gone a really true pace from the off, I think her lack of a run found her out. I think on another day, that will be a very close race, Gaeth and Enable.
Okay, that's really interesting then. John Gosson, he was keen to say that Enable would come on for it, and that their camp was quite happy with the race beforehand. It's funny, isn't it, you mentioned about front runners, because often you hear commentators say, oh, it's done it the hard way, but often running from the front is the most efficient avenue to take, isn't it? And I think that's what we saw with Gaeth, and obviously he had that fitness from the Coronation Cup, and dropping down in trip I think was key as well, because you knew he'd see it out really well, and that opens up races like the Judmont International at York. I mean, I could see him doing a Chamadal in that, and things like that. What do you think, where should Gaeth go now?
Whenever he can find a small field that he can boss. I mean, we've no question about his ability now, we've no questions about his durability now either, particularly, and the only thing that will continue to scupper him is when he can't boss it like he did on the front there on Saturday, on Sunday. So, yeah, find the races. I mean, Judmont tends not to get big fields that often. The King George doesn't anymore, really. Find the races where he will get to boss it and you'll win you more Group 1s. Obviously, that's easier said than done, but that is still the key to Gaeth.
Okay. Binners, how did the bookies react to Gaeth's win?
Well, Maddie, we have got him in the King George market, although that looks unlikely. He's 3-1, second favourite behind Enable. William Buick was saying he's a 10 furlong horse. So, yeah, it looks like he's going to sharpen the Judmont International. We haven't got that priced yet. I'd imagine the Irish Champion Stakes might come into the equation. But Charlie Appleby did mention the Ark, and he's now third best in the Ark at 8-1, behind just Love at 4-1 favourite, and Enable a shade bigger at 9-2.
See, that's the thing.
Would you see him vulnerable in an Ark, then, Keith?
Yeah, you can't get out and do what he did on Sunday in an Ark. That's why, you know, last year he came in having won a German Group One by about 3 furlongs, and you know, we knew he couldn't boss it in an Ark, and he didn't, and he finished where he did, right down the field somewhere. Irish Champion Stakes, I think there'll be a similar thing. Do you think if there's 5 Ballydoyle horses, are going to let him go off in front and do what he wants? I would doubt it. So, you know, that's the difficulty. This is, tell you what, we're peddling the cliches today. It's the good headache to have cliche, this one, is that you know, you can put him in any Group 1, middle distance Group 1 you want, but you need to find the one where he's not going to get hassled.
Yep.
You know, we can't have any golden freezes in there. Otherwise, it all falls apart potentially. So he is great to watch, though. You know, you love to see horses go off and do that like he has. When was the last time the really top class middle distance horse that did it that way, really? I can't think of him. We don't have that many, to be honest. And yeah, he's smashing fun to watch. And I hope he can keep his form all the way through this season. And I hope he just doesn't end up basically being, what's the term? There's a term, but I can't say it on here.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. I'm sure we know what you mean. Let's move on to Shanti then, and Mishriff. For me, I actually think this was one of the performances of the weekend. Maybe people will disagree with me, but his win in the Prix de Jockey Club from the Summit and Victor Ludorum, which was in a significantly quicker time than the Diane and Fancy Blue. It was another win in the race for jockey Aritz Mendizabal, who won it in 2008 with Vision de Tar. And this horse is just all power in a finish. And it didn't look likely a couple of furlongs out, but once he got the run, as the jockey said, he settled it in a couple of strides, Keith. And obviously his form from Newmarket before that's working out really well as well. I've said all along that I don't think we should underestimate this horse. And it's a shame that Connections didn't really make it clear what race they were going to pick next, because I really, really like this horse.
Yeah, he could be really good. I thought this race was a really interesting watch in behind. I was very slightly surprised he got away with what he did, actually. He basically barred Palo Alto out of the way to get his run, and that finished sixth. I mean, obviously, I backed Palo Alto, so I'm naturally but that horse could, I mean, he wasn't going to win, but I think that horse could have been placed if he had got a clear run, and the French rules on interference being what they are. I was slightly surprised that Mishriff didn't get a telling off, or you can't tell off the horse, but Mendizabal didn't get a telling off for what he did to Palo Alto, because that was something that I would expect to see punished in France. But there's no question he was the best horse in the race on the day. I don't think Victor Ludorum stayed.
No, he shaped very much like that, didn't he? The way he made that ground, he made up a lot more ground, it seemed, wide on the outside, and he just couldn't sustain it in the closing stages.
Absolutely. I think he's going to probably end up being Siskin's, depending on Earthlight and what they do with him, Victor Ludorum could end up being Siskin's biggest challenge as champion 3-year-old miler this year. Champion miler probably, because I don't think the older milers are up to that much. He'll drop back to mile now, hopefully, and be a proper tool at that sort of trip. I don't think he's stayed, and he did, as you say, did very well to make up the ground he did before he flattened out. And the Summit finished ahead of him. The Summit was second in the Poulain at Deauville. Victor Ludorum made him look like a placer, really, in that race. But the Summit has plugged on. He is more of a stay of the Summit, and it's the only way the Summit beats Victor Ludorum was because he stayed better than he did, and that's what happened.
Yeah, quite clear that, wasn't it? I'd love to see Mishriff. I mean, this was on quicker ground, but he has got good form on all sorts. So I'd love to see him in something like a Champion Stakes by make-believe. He seems to be very versatile and adaptable. I just hope he is that good. Yeah, Keith, Mishriff, where would you go if you owned him?
I'd stick to a mile two. He certainly looks to have lots of pace. Yeah, I'd probably... I mean, there's a sort of horse that... yeah, you'd have thought the Eclipse was the right race in the old in a normal sort of season. Is a race for him to go for. I think he probably will go for the Judmont now instead, I would imagine, or you know, mile two races for those you are coming to. Yeah, you're staying in Britain and Ireland for those. So yeah, I'd be imagining he'll wind up in one or the other Champion Stakes.
Okay, Binners, any prices?
Well, we weren't sure, Maddy. We put him into the arc at 20-1 first show, but yeah, Keith may well be right about 10 furlongs. Just quickly, without trying to be clever, but also giving Keith a pat on the back, the winning jockey on Mishriff did got four days suspension. So Keith was right. He deserved a little bit of a punishment, and the stewards did give him one.
Yeah, stewards inquiry. Of course, placings weren't changed, but he was reprimanded, as you say, Binners. Another close finish. We've had Serpentine and Mishriff winning quite big distances, but a close finish in the Dian. Fancy Blue for Donico O'Brien just got the better of Alpine Star with Peaceful and Rabbi Hat just in behind. The Irish Oaks could be next for Fancy Blue, so whether she'll fate Love or not, we'll see. And she reversed the form from the Curra with Peaceful, who was running on and closing up the line. And I thought this was another interesting race, Keith, that had quite a few different dimensions to it. Alpine Star, I mean, I don't think you could say she didn't stay. She was only just beaten, but this seemed a race of fine margins.
It was, and I think, well, yes, it was a race of fine margins, but you notice that the first four came pretty well clear in a race where they didn't go all that hard. I suspect those four horses are all quite good fillies. Obviously, Alpine Star's already won a Group One and whatnot. So we've got you know, probably four fillies that are maybe up to Group One standard, and the rest you can sort of leave to one side. I knew that the Rabbi Hat that finished fourth, the Rougie horse, that has been extremely well regarded all along. That was it made its reappearance early on when France came back, and there was just this assumption it would go off favourite for the Dian. So I think that they're all that sort of standard of filly. None of them will lay a glove on Love, I would have thought, especially going up to mile four if they decide to do that. But, you know, in sex-restricted races, any of those first four could have had more joy.
Which one would you say will end up top on ability?
Probably Alpine Star, but might be back at a mile. The problem we've got there, of course, is that they can't, well, they have to keep her separate from, you know, Nyarkos have got the champion miler at the moment, as it stands. It might be that they have to try and avoid Circus Maximus and all that sort of stuff. But I think she, as a miler, would be better than any of these other horses as a middle distance type.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. You mentioned they were all quite close up. Peaceful was, and then she dropped back, and you thought she was going to not really get involved. But then she stayed on again. Maybe this will be more her trip, do you think? Or would you go back to a mile with her as well?
Wouldn't have a particularly strong view, to be honest. I mean, she's I think she probably is. I don't think a mile I would go for. I mean, she's a mile on at least on the dam side, and by Galileo I think she'll be as good back at 10. I just think she's one of these fillies that she's competitive at Group One company, but if she's a colt she'd have no chance, and she'd be in Group Twos if she was a colt. But being a filly, she can just about pass muster in the Group One races.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go for a quick break before we talk about the York Dante meeting and then the start of the July Festival at Newmarket. But before we do, just a word on that from you, Binners.
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant finish to the French Oaks, wasn't it, Maddie? Peaceful. I really like her. She's got such resolution and she ran really well in defeat. We've put the winner, Fancy Blue, and Peaceful in the arc, both at 25-1. Three-year-old fillies do well in the races. We've already touched upon, you never know, could be a big price. But and as for Mishriff, yeah, he keeps on producing. I think he won that big race just touched off in that big race in Saudi Arabia. Then he won a nice conditions race against a stable companion who ran well behind Highest Ground next time, and he keeps on producing. So be fascinating to see if he turns up at York in August.
Indeed, lots of promising performances. It'd be interesting to see where they all end up. As I mentioned, we'll take that break now and see you in just a second.
Paddy Power are now offering free streaming on all UK and Irish horse racing. No bet required. Just log in and watch.
Racing fans are spoilt then this week, as on Thursday, York's delayed Dante meeting gets underway. And the first race we're going to talk about on the Thursday is the Tattersall's Musidora Stakes, over 10 furlongs, a Group 3 for the fillies. And John Gosden has dominated this race in recent years, having trained five of the last 10 winners. And Judmont horses look to hold the key as well, as Franconia, the listed Abingdon winner, and Pocket Square, as well as Rysetta, are all engaged there. Keith, any view on the form of this race? Which name stands out for you?
Franconia looked really good at Newbury last time, but Cavaletta ran poorly at the weekend in the Lancashire Oaks, and you'd maybe wonder about the depth of the form there. But at the time, you thought Cavaletta had bumped into one, so you would certainly think that Franconia should 11-8 or ish prices that are the ones I can see just now. I wouldn't be rushing in, but you would imagine she would be a rightful favourite.
Mm. And Binners, she is the top of your market?
She is indeed, Maddie. Yeah, 4-5, a fraction of odds on Franconia. And it's 3-1, the other Khalid Abdullah horse, Pocket Square. 11-2, Dubai Love. 7-1, Riquetta. And it's 10-1, Bar.
Yeah, Pocket Square by Knight of Thunder, who's just having an absolutely rampant season as a sire. He's doing so well, isn't he? So interesting to see. He's got another big contender. So Franconia for you, Keith. Who would you go for at this stage, Binners?
Yeah, I'd like Pocket Square, Maddie, for Roger Charlton. Thought she was quite impressive in that group for it at Oakville in October. A mile on heavy ground and an extended 10 furlongs at York should be just up her street.
Yeah, beating Run Wild in that Group 3 at Deauville over a mile. So good form in a way. Let's move on then to the Albasti Equiworld Dubai Dante Stakes, Group 2, again over the 10 furlongs for the three-year-olds. And a big absentee from the Derby, but it would have been a very Sir Michael Stout move to run him in that race, highest ground, unbeaten in two. Keith, maybe I'm getting a bit carried away with the visuals, but I really, really like this horse. It seems that connections do as well. And I think this is the right decision by him. I think he probably needed that little bit of more time and, not overfacing him too soon. I think this is a colt who could go very, very far.
He potentially could. Now, I've got a little bit of an angle on him in that I saw that, obviously, with the Haydock way he beat Bald Koenig. I'm not certain Val Koenig really stays.
He's
half brother to, obviously, Val Geis, the art winner and all that, but he is a Kingman, and he looked very quick at his debut, was in now Wolverhampton. Everything about him, I mean, the Kingmans are always, always fast, and I think the Kingman side of his stamina is going to end up winning out. I think if I could get a decent price, I'd probably bet back his best performance of his career coming at a mile. So in that regard,
you don't think the form's as strong as perhaps some people?
They're come 11 lengths clear. They're both very good horses.
Mm.
But highest ground, it's not hard to look at that race and think highest ground's outlasted him. And I went in to the race, having watched the Newmarket race of Val Koenig, thinking, not 100% sure this wants even an extended mile two. So not surprising to see that was the way he was beaten by highest ground. Now, highest ground will improve on that, and he will almost certainly be one of these horses that Stout keeps improving all of this year, probably most of the next year too. So in that regard, absolutely no quibbles about his long-term ability. I won't be backing him at 5-4 in the Dante. If Al Suhail runs and you can get about 4-1, which I see just now, he is the one I will be backing. He looked really quite good last year. The Military March form at Newmarket in the Autumn Stakes, I think, is probably the best form on offer in this race. And the Guineas is a throwout. He was keen early on. I think he might have almost stumbled as well. And he was still there as he went into the dip. He sort of veered right going into the dip a little bit. And as soon as that happened, Doyle eased off him. Throw that run out. He does have the best bit of form in this race. And he definitely will stay at least a mile two. He's bred to stay a mile and a half, really.
Mm. That's interesting then. So I can see why you'd be dubious about that highest ground form. As I say, I'm very much just happy to get carried away with that because he looks like a future star. But Al Suhail, you're going to forgive him that Guineas run. That's the trouble if you want to take on highest ground. I wouldn't say this is necessarily the deepest race. You've got Cormorant in there, who beat Russian Emperor in the Derrinstown, Thunderous, who was second in the Fairway Stakes. And then you've even got horses like Tilsit, who was the 19 lengths winner on Northumberland Plate Day, who's having his first run on the turf. So it'd be interesting if he turns up. Ben, just run us through your market.
Well, highest ground, even money favourite, Maddie. Keith's selection there, El Suhail, 5-1, 6-1, Cormorant, 7 Thunderous, and it's 8-1 the rest.
And what would your view on this one be?
Well, unusual for me, Maddie. I don't tend to go for favourites, but I do like highest ground. I think in a normal year, I may have made a few quid off highest ground. He was Sir Michael's only entrant in the 2000 Guineas at one stage, his only entrant in the Irish Derby. And of course, we never saw him in a trial before one of the big races, but he might have been a bigger price than the 2-1 or 6-4 at Haydock he ended up. I think he's very good. I'm quite interested by Keith's point about Valconi. That's interesting because I know they thought a lot of him earlier in the year. He was working very well in Newmarket. So it'll be fascinating to see him over a mile.
His big stride, perhaps very deceptive then, that he isn't this horse who wants further. But anyway, let's talk about Newmarket on Thursday. And a horse we mentioned earlier, Spanish Mission, won the Bahrain Trophy last year. Hartnell won it back in 2014. So it has produced some very good horses in the past. And again, another crossover with Mishrif. Al Arzi was fifth to him in that excellent Newmarket Stakes. And he won by 10 lengths last time. The punters seem to want to keep him on side, Binners.
Yes, that's right, Maddie. Yes. Well, Arzi heads the market, Maddie, at 5-2. Yep. 3-1 Dawn Rising, 9-2 El Dabaran, 6 Celestron, 7 Miss Yoda, and Memorabilis.
Well said. Keith, what would your analysis of this be quickly?
I think Powers have done right to duck Al Arzi. I think he is a really good horse. I don't know what happened on its reappearance run. It drifted, I think, at Newmarket when it was fifth behind Mishrif. I think he realised that was he wasn't quite there. And obviously, he's come out and redressed the balance there by winning on his ear next time. I'm a bit like the other, what's that good filly Haggis has got that won a listed race in her debut from Love? Was it from Love?
Oh, yes.
I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, it's the Suey colours, anyway. That one, that's... Mm. They moved her up in trip a lot quicker than I thought she would. And I think they've done the same
with her. She ran in the Queen's Vase, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. And I'm not sure Al Arzi needs a mile five yet, but they're running him in this to try and win a group race with him. So that'll be interesting to see. I would maybe as well just put in a little mention from Miss Yoda. She was a horse. I looked into her facts and figures. I looked into her because I was so interested in English King for the Derby. I used her when in the Lingfield Oaks trial. And was very impressed with the figures she'd clocked in that one. She disappointed me a little bit in the Ribblesdale, but would not be surprised if she turned out to be a pretty good horse.
Okay, and that's interesting. I mentioned the Queen's Vase form, and Al Dabaran is in there as well. He was third to Santiago in that race, who since went on to win the Irish Derby. Quick word on the Tattersall's July Stakes then. This is going to see a lot of the juveniles we saw at Royal Ascot take each other on. We've got the Coventry second Carder in there. The Johnstons won the race with Card Sharp in 2017. We have the Windsor Castle winner Tattersall and the second Yasman. Whereas the Coventry, we have Admiral Nelson, who was sent off favourite and finished eighth, and Lauded, who was one place ahead of him in seventh as well. So this has the potential to be very, very informative. Keith, which strand of form would you have on top?
Oh, Coventry, no question. I like Cadder a lot. I thought I backed up with the Coventry and, you know...
So did I.
32nd to one, it was 150-1. It stings a bit. But I think you can see Cadder's a really good horse. The most interesting strand in this race for me will be whether he can, you know, Admiral Nelson, the dogs were barking, so to speak, about him before the Coventry. I didn't think he got a great ride, frankly. And with a more positive ride, whether he can lay a glove on Cadder will be the thing that's interesting to see. I think they'll both be better horses in tactical.
Okay. Binners, just run us through your market. I presume Cadder is right at the top.
Yes, he certainly is, Maddie. My selection is going to be Admiral Nelson. As Keith said, yeah, he was 5-2 favourite for the Coventry. He dwelt at the start, and I don't think he got the best passage. So I think he's better than that. Quadra heads the market 11-4, then it's 7-2 tactical, 4 Admiral Nelson, 5 Merchant's Quay, and 8-1 Bar.
Okay, and then it's the turn of the fillies on Friday with the Duchess of Cambridge Stakes. Albany winner Dan Dalla, wasn't she impressive at Royal Ascot? Looks to take on Timescale, who didn't run at the Royal Meeting, but won the listed Empress Filly Stakes very impressively last time. The Queen Mary form's in there, represented by O'Brien's More Beautiful. And then we have Thirskwin at Halla, Halla, Halla in there as well. But I think on paper, is this going to be quite straightforward for Dan Dalla, Keith?
Way she won at Royal Ascot, you might think so. It's not a race I'll be getting involved in, to be honest. I don't hear anything on the grapevine from what comes out of Ballydoyle, but I have heard people that are a bit closer to the operation thinking that is the More Beautiful is a very, very well-regarded two-year-old of theirs. I believe, and the market would tell you this anyway if you didn't know anything, but she was just meant to win at Royal Ascot. And it's very disappointing for whatever reason. So I'll be interested to see if she can get back on track a little bit. But Dan Dalla was a deeply impressive winner at Royal Ascot. So how you can take her in good faith, you'd have to be very brave to do that, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And quite a few of O'Brien's were a bit disappointing in the juvenile races, I thought. More Beautiful was definitely one of those in ninth. Mother Earth, I mean, she's come out after a good win in... A good run, in that Albany and won. So that was a boost for the form. Binners, quickly run us through your Duke of Cambridge market before we go to the Falmouth Stakes.
Yeah, Dan Dalla, 5-4 favourite, Maddie. 9-4 Timescale, 7-2 More Beautiful, 12-1 Halla Halla Halla, along with She Do, and it's 14-1 the rest.
Yeah, the Tassels Falmouth Stakes over a mile, traditionally probably one of the weaker group ones on the calendar. And to me, this looks like a bit of a shootout between Queen Anne II, Terra Bellum, and the Duke of Cambridge winner, Nazif. She was pushed quite hard by Agincourt. Surprising run that was in that race. Or could you see there being an upset here, Keith?
I am quite a fan of Nazif. It's the sort of race where... you say, or do you force me to have a bet? Obviously, nobody ever does force you to have a bet. But if it were the case, I would take Nazif to beat her because I do think she is Group 1 class amongst her own sex. Whereas, obviously, Terra Bellum is firmly priced in, and is that. So, yeah, again, no strong view, but I would maybe side with Nazif.
Yeah, clearly on an upward trajectory, isn't she? And I thought her win at Kempton was just absolutely awesome. That definitely showed why she was up to the calibre to win that Duke of Cambridge.
Might depend on how things go there, Mary, because if it's not a very well-run race, Nazif's got an absolutely devastating turn of foot, hasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. As I mentioned on that all-weather run.
Just deadly. Quickens like nothing on earth. So if it does become a bit of a dash for the cash, so to speak, she could really give Terra Bellum something to think about.
Mm. And I think maybe you could argue that a straight mile at Ascot's probably not her perfect conditions, maybe not on testing ground as well.
Yeah, potentially not. Yeah, she's a pouncer, and that's the Ascot Street Mile's not really built for that. So you're quite right. Yeah.
Okay. Swiftly moving on, then we will talk about the main race on Saturday, the Group 1 July Cup. Again, another really interesting aspect of this season is all these different form lines coming into the open Group 1s. Golden Horde, the Commonwealth Cup winner, is going to bid to do what Muharrar did in 2015. We have the Diamond Jubilee form represented with Hello Yumzane, the winner, Skeptical, the third, and Cardam, the fourth, all in there, as well as the Jersey second, Monarch of Egypt. And as I mentioned, Art Power, whether he goes or not, he's engaged as well. Binnis, run us through your market.
Well, we make Golden Horde 5-2 favourite, Maddie, 7-2 Skeptical, 5-1 Hello Yumzane, 7 Cardam, and it's 12-1 Bar.
Keith, I looked at this market and I was quite surprised that Skeptical was almost half the price of Hello Yumzane in some places. I thought this test would definitely suit Hello Yumzane, and I thought Skeptical shaped more like a 5-furlong horse at Ascot.
More or less, yeah. I thought the same. I wouldn't be looking at that race and thinking, I didn't watch the Diamond Jubilee and think, oh, you'll get him in the July Cup.
Mm.
Can't imagine who did. I mean, this is still an improving horse. That's the thing with Skeptical, is that improvement still being factored in. Hello Yumzane, before the Diamond Jubilee, I said he was an each way bet in the race because it was just so, he is a very likeable, very straightforward sprinter, but he's run to 121 in winning that race. I think that is basically his level. I don't see him getting much better. Whereas Skeptical could yet improve and go past him, but the prices are out of whack at that, given the conditions they're racing under here. I would definitely agree with that. So yeah, that would how I would view that one. I would again liken the Diamond Jubilee, say that, you know, Hill Williams in each way is the sort of most safe and best way through the race, because he's a very likable and very consistent as sprinters go.
Yeah, I think this will be a race that I'd certainly have a look at to have a bet in. You've also got Oxted in there, who intentionally missed Royal Ascot. You've got Threat. I'm just seeing that they've got a German horse that William Buick's currently jocked up on our website. Namos entered as well. Who would you be wanting to put your cash on at this stage? Would you really value Golden Horde's Commonwealth win? Do you think he could be another star sprinter for Clive Cox?
Yeah, he won the Commonwealth Cup. Tends to be a really good race, and the fact that he won it so convincingly. I mean, I took the hump because I back Wooded. Sold out on the day, and I was convinced he's entered him at the weekend in the Jean Pratt, which will be in. I don't think he. Yeah, I think he is more of a six type or a faster horse than that. But yeah, I took the huff a bit with the Commonwealth Cup this year, but Golden Horde was convincing. You couldn't argue with that. And in that regard, you can see why they make him favourite. The three-year-old sprinters do have a good record taking on the older horses now, the way that the program's laid out and the way that they breed now. Three-year-old sprinters are going to have that lot more success compared to what they would have in the old days. I wonder if I noticed Sylvester D'Souza's dropped up on Shine So Bright. I would be interested to see. He could be, if nothing else, the horse that spoils it for Hill Williams in, thinking about it. You know, he is. We saw what he did at Epsom. He's a very quick horse. I thought he was almost interesting in the Diamond Jubilee because he looked so fast over further. I don't think he'll have any problem laying up with Group 1 sprinters. And it could be that he has an angle in there in pace terms more than anything else. But it's a race that, you know, by the July Cup, you've normally got a pretty good idea of who's the form pick, haven't you? But I'm not sure you have that now.
No. Often people cramp these older sprinters. But then the sort of handicappers and the better horses coming through, we saw it a couple of times on Northumberland Plate Day. They just weren't able to actually improve past them. So it is a fascinating division. It's always tough when we record these podcasts because of when the entries come out and the next stages are passed. Obviously, Art Power, now we know he's not in there. So that explains why I was going bonkers about that 12-1. Foolish of me. Anyway, Binners, before we leave our listeners, who do you fancy in the July Cup?
Yeah, I'm going for Hello Humes, and Maddie. You guys have already bigged him up. He did the bookies a massive favour getting the better of Skeptical at Royal Ascot. That was looking quite a bad day if Frankie had prevailed. He's very consistent. I think the ground might have been a little bit too heavy for him when he got beaten in the champion sprint at Ascot at the end of last season. Nice performance beating Dream of Dreams. And yeah, I think at 5-1, he's a little bit more value than Golden Horde at 5-2 at the front of the market.
Okay, before we leave, listeners, do you have any other fancies this week or this weekend? It'd be handy to get a nap from each of you. We'll go to you first then, Keith. Who would you be looking at to have a bet on this week?
The one that that's not come up yet, there's the good handicap at Newmarket on Friday, mile 6 race. I think the Max Weekend's building up to something. And I've noticed that Mark Johnson's already got Ryan Moore jocked up for the ride. I think Johnson realises that mile 6, bit of quick ground. He got no real run at Royal Ascot when he finished 4th. I think he might have been 2nd with a clear run. That was, anyway, a career best. I think he'll improve again. And, yeah, I think he is one I'd be very interested in on Friday.
OK, and yourself, Binners?
I'm going for a David Ellsworth horse in the 6 furlong handicap at Newmarket on Thursday called No Nonsense. David always said that he thought the horse would be better as a 4-year-old. He made a reappearance in the Wokingham. He was well beaten, but it was his first run for nearly a year. And he had good form as a 3-year-old. He was 2nd to Calix in the Commonwealth Cup trial at Ascot. And the handicapper looks to have given him a bit of a chance here. Right? I think he might run well.
Okay, so two dark horses for you to be aware of this week then. Hope you have a wonderful one with all the excellent action at York and Newmarket. If you enjoy these shows, as always, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe. And as always, Bruce and the team will be back on Friday to guide you through all those races with the final fields then. So stay tuned for that and we'll see you next week.
Paddy Power are giving money back as a free bet if your horse finishes second, third or fourth on one horse race every single day. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.